kids walk away from faith and they walk away from church because for years they just saw mom and dad say this was important for an hour and a half on Sundays. Yeah. But it was never important any other day of the week. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, you know, going a far extreme here. But if we never pray with our kids unless we're at church or with our Christian friends.
Yeah.
Or if we never read the Bible unless we're sitting with our small group, you know, we need, our kids are going to not ever think it's important, right?
For sure.
In the same way, if I told my kids, y'all need to eat vegetables. You need, this is healthy for you and you need to eat it. But like we ate them only on Tuesday nights, you know, or
Sonic the rest of the
day. Yeah. And we just went to Sonic. Yeah. Like yeah. They're going to be like, well, they said that, but we really didn't eat vegetables growing up. So it's probably not that important.
Welcome to another episode of the Disciple Making Leader Podcast. I'm your host today, Ben Borgman, the Executive Director of Disciple First. And I've got some great friends with us here today on the podcast. You know what? It's summertime, Dallas, and Craig's not here.
That's right.
So we've given him the day off, but we let you, which some of our viewers have seen you. If they've seen some of the earlier podcasts, you came on and helped us do some introduction. So we're letting you on this side of the today.
Got the B team today.
Yeah, no. We brought the big guns today because we also have your better half with us today.
That is true.
Miss Martha Harvey.
Thank you.
So we get all of the juicy details. We get,
that's right.
Does he leave his socks and underwear on the bathroom floor? Like, what is, you know, what does he leave in the sink? Like, you know, we get to hear all that today. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, right? This is going to be a different kind of podcast. Yeah. I'm just kidding. Listeners, don't hit pause.
Yeah, we're not talking, this isn't a marriage podcast today, but we are talking about family. So,
that's right.
So thank you guys for being on. We'll kind of do an introduction here in a minute, but Dallas is a part of our Disciple First team and Martha is his wife. They both serve in ministry outside of Disciple First too, and have a great ministry for families called With Families. And so really what we're going to talk about today is, why is disciple making in the home so critical? You know, there's a lot of things going on in the world that are, you know, you don't want to turn on the news, and it just kind of, it's really sad to what our kids are engaging in school and in community. It's just, it's an interesting world out there. And us as parents, I believe, have a very critical role and a very impactful opportunity to actually raise these kids and help them steer in the same, into the right way and towards the Lord. And so that's what we're going to talk about, is how can we, and how can we do that? And then also really we're going to do this over two episodes. Today we're going to talk about why. So before we kind of get to the how, we're just going to drill in, why is this so critical? Mm-hmm. Beyond our culture, beyond that, but just kind of some biblical reasons too, of why is this so critical that we make disciple making home such a priority. So thank you all for being on today.
Thanks for having us.
All right.
I'm excited.
Yeah, me too. So let's just kind of get to a few introductions. So Martha, we know who Dallas is. Dallas is the director of training and engagement. He makes the podcast happen. But really, you're the star of the show today. So we want to know kind of y'all's story, and we want to know the truth. So we're going to ask you, like, how did you guys meet? How was, like, maybe your upbringing, what y'all's background, and then how did you get into this thing called With Families?
Oh, my. I will really try to give you the SparkNote version, because there's, like, 100 God stories in this story. But Dallas and I met in New Jersey. We were married. We're about to celebrate 11 years of marriage. But we met 12 years ago. I had just come to New Jersey, and I was actually performing full-time in musical theater.
Wow. It
was two career hats ago. I met Dallas at church.
Yeah.
And the very long God story short is that in less than a year, we were married. We were married that following August after I met him in September. And then we lived in New Jersey. We had two sweet kids, Eloise and Beau, while we were there. And during our time there, we had full-time jobs in our school district. I was the theater director, and Dallas ran the theater. We got to work together. All of our jobs have been together.
Yeah,
it's really incredible. I always say,
and you're still married.
And I always say that, and we're still married.
We had to learn.
Yeah.
We did. Truly, like, God was really refining us for so many different, you know, hats that he was going to ask us to wear later in our life, but we worked at the school district together, and we were the worship leaders at our church together in New Jersey. And then through the time there, God really began to shape our hearts. And in our final year there, which we didn't realize was our final year there till it was, Dallas even started to preach and felt very called to ministry. And Dallas would tell you the fast way to realize that you need more training is to
There's nothing more exposing to how much you know or rather don't know than when you're find yourself in a pulpit and trying to preach. So God made it pretty evident, hey, it's time to go to seminary.
Yeah.
So we moved down here, and I would also echo in that season, as we were new parents, God was revealing a lot of things that needed to change in our home too, to be intentional with our kids. And as we had been on the front lines of serving in church in New Jersey, and then when we moved down to Fort Worth, we served in a church, God revealed over and over and over again that the church can only go as far as the homes that are represented in them. But homes need help today. I mean, you could do a whole podcast on how Satan has just been attacking the home and families and God's design of families, attacking dads, attacking moms, like forever, right? And now here we are, and we look at our families and we say, you know, you need to tell your kids about Jesus. And most of them are like, yeah, that sounds like a great idea, but most have no idea where to start. And that's kind of where we found ourselves, was we came down here for seminary. We were in the thick of training. God was really shaping our hearts towards families and how much help they needed, because we knew we felt that way. And we were even coming from two pastors' families. My dad is a pastor. Dallas's dad is a pastor. I mean, we have incredible families, but we were even feeling that. Like, we felt like, what do we do? How are we going to really point our kids to Jesus?
I'm not the only one.
You're not. I mean, we got to make it more just real talk, you know? Like, we feel
we're all ill-equipped.
We're all ill-equipped. We all are going to face those everyday moments where your kids ask a question and you don't know the answer, or where something happens and you're like, oh my gosh, I never thought I would face this moment that I'm in right now. And all you have the strength to do is pray, Lord, please help me.
Yeah, I laugh because I have a 19-year-old son. So there's just all these things over the years. So you guys are in the You guys are on the other end of the spectrum. I'm over here just laughing, thinking of all those times where that's true. So anyway,
yes,
sorry, go ahead.
Yes, I mean, yeah, we're not in the teen years yet. We have an 8-year-old and a 5-year-old, but our heart just really began to be shaped towards families, parents. I was working in children's ministry, and Dallas, like I said, we've always just served together. So he was such an incredible support and help in that ministry. And really that led us to this call now to begin with, and we'll get into that a little bit later, but WITH stands for worship in the home. And all the facets of worship, not just singing.
Yeah,
so people don't get scared around. It's like, everybody sing every day.
Sing. Yeah, I'd be in trouble.
Yeah.
My kids. Well, of course, my daughter, she loves to sing, but she cannot sing. It's horrible. How good? That was good. What? No, sorry, sweetie.
Allie.
Your gift. That's not your gift, baby.
You're exposed.
Yeah.
Well, I think it's important to point out that Martha's always kind of been on this train. We need to pour into our children more. We need to be speaking into their faith. And I was like, yeah, that sounds good. And I was really, if I can confess, letting her lead.
Mm-hmm.
And so we both had a professor at two different semesters who really challenged us to raise the level of disciple making in our home. Mm-hmm. When we started to do that, we started to witness crazy things in our home. You know, healing in areas that we didn't know needed healing. A new kind of peace in the home, comfort from just the Word being in the living room, from Jesus being brought into the center. And it was just like this aha moment for me, and for Martha, it was probably like, I've been telling you, like that kind of moment.
I didn't say that.
But, not out loud. But, you know, we started to experience this, and we're like, this is what's missing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, in the same way that at Disciple First, we say, hey, a lot of people have been in the church and guys in ministry who are like, something's missing. And then they find, well, this one-on-one, one-on-some disciple making, this gives me life.
Yeah.
It's the same thing, but we're talking about it in your home and with your kids.
Yeah.
And it gave us this new life as believers. And we just wanted the other families in our church and our friends to have that same kind of experience.
Well, and I think a lot of it goes back to some of this idea of North American Christian culture, church culture that we have, is we've compartmentalized our faith. It's only in the church. Mm-hmm. It's only there. I can act the way I want everywhere else. I've checked that box today. I've done that same thing at home. Well, my kids go to Sunday school. My kids go to Wednesday nights. My kids do this. So they're good, right? But you kind of highlighted it, Martha, the time difference that your kids are in church and the influence that, even if they have the greatest youth group in the world or the greatest kids pastor in the world, how much time are they really with them, right?
I actually have stats on that.
It's on us.
Yes, it is. Parents. And over time, we have truly just outsourced it to the church. Like, in the same way that we think, okay, we're going to take them to soccer so they learn soccer and piano lessons for piano, I think without any ill intentions, Christian parents just think, well, I want them to have God, so we're going to go to church. Yeah. And we never thought that, the majority of that time that they're being able to be discipled, they're actually with us. Yeah. Like, the church is such an important part, but it's a partnership between both, and we can't outsource it.
Yeah,
the
church should be equipping us in order to live a certain way, whether that's just me as an individual or me as a husband or me as a parent, then, like, It's about a lifestyle. We talk about that all the time. We're not just, reproducing grow groups just so you can be in a Bible study and check that box. It's no, we're trying to invest our life into people so that they live a lifestyle. Same thing. Let's invest in parents so they live a lifestyle in their home every day. Like, I know you guys are going to get into Deuteronomy. I mean, as you're going down the road, as you're going down, where are you going? Everywhere you go down, as you go walk down the road, as you drive to school, as you drop off. And that is where the real impact for God to speak and change life and bring peace into the home and enable our kids to be able, in a good way, maybe equip our kids to be able to engage. And I mean, this world's not getting any nicer and any more closer to God. So, and be able to stand in that. So but go ahead.
Well, so I just have some numbers to throw at you to kind of elevate that point.
Yeah.
Let's say that your kids show up to the church once or twice a week, every week, still only in an hour and a half every week. And then they're at school primarily being influenced by their peers for 35 hours a week. On top of that, the average amount of time that a teenager will spend on screens in a week. And now, this may not be everyone's kids, but the average amount is 60 hours on a screen.
Wow.
And that's outside of those school hours. So we're talking phones, TV, computers, whatever that may be. So you're talking about, you have an hour and a half of church if they're there every week versus 95 hours that they're being discipled. And they are being discipled.
Yeah.
By screens, technology, by TikTok, Instagram, by influencers. You don't even know who they are as a parent because you're not watching the same screen that they are, by their peers at school, by their teachers. And so the same study showed that we have approximately 10 hours with our kids in a given week. Now, that varies wildly. Yeah. But for the average family that has kids in activities, in school, it comes down to about 10 hours a week. Now, those 10 hours don't even include, that's not 10 hours of meaningful connection. Mm-hmm. In fact, that might be 15 minutes a day. Mm-hmm. 15 minutes a day of meaningful connection. And so, if you versus 1.5 hours, 10 hours is a lot more that you have these periods where you get to control what you do with your kids, what you talk about. And so those 10 hours, if you're not seeking to make it more, are really, really important.
Yeah, it's almost how do you, don't have a lot of time anyway, but if you're not intentional, then you really start squeezing that time away. So I think that's where a lot of this idea of, we'll get to in the next episode is how do we be more intentional? Mm-hmm. But it's what I see, and again, we're on the outside. I've got a son in college and then a junior in high school. So we're kind of on the other end of raising from what we'll talk about today, but I just see it as everything is squeezing your kid. There's just things squeezing their time, their attention, and it's just pressing and pressing and pressing. So how do we as parents be intentional and press back? Because if we don't, and it gets to this point of, why is this so critical? Because if we don't, then they will be discipled by something else. They will be discipled by someone else. And again, that can go a lot of different ways and not so good ways.
But. Yeah. Studies show that children by age 7, most of them by age 7, have their world view formed. Wow. And by 12, whether they've spoken it out loud or not, they've decided if they're going to stay or leave the church.
Yeah, when they leave the home, they've already decided.
They've already decided. Wow. And, like, they're years away from leaving. But all of that plays into what's happening in the home. It plays into parents and how we're living our faith outside of Sunday morning, you know, all the other days in those hours. I just think, you know, our kids spot a fake faster than anybody, and especially in us, right? They know when we're being hypocritical. Mm-hmm. And I just think kids walk away from faith and they walk away from church because for years they just saw mom and dad say this was important for an hour and a half on Sundays. Yeah. But it was never important any other day of the week. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, you know, going a far extreme here. But if we never pray with our kids unless we're at church or with our Christian friends.
Yeah.
Or if we never read the Bible unless we're sitting with our small group, you know, we need, our kids are going to not ever think it's important, right?
For sure.
In the same way, if I told my kids, y'all need to eat vegetables. You need, this is healthy for you and you need to eat it. But like we ate them only on Tuesday nights, you know,
or Sonic the rest of the week.
Yeah. And we just went to Sonic. They're going to be like, well, they said that, but we really didn't eat vegetables growing up. So it's probably not that important. They have to see those habits, lived out. And they also, I think, some of the biggest moments where our faith can be on display as a discipleship tool is in those harder moments and the peaks, the valleys, and how your kids see you respond in those moments too. But if they don't see it lived out on Sunday morning, it's never going to be anything that important to them. And we just can't outsource it anymore. Yeah. We have to say no more.
No more.
Yeah. And it really comes down to what God says our role as parents is.
Yeah.
And he kind of makes it clear in every era of the Bible that this is our role. There's no way to theologically explain away what God has called us to do. Yeah. And for every verse that we have arguing that we need to be disciple makers, that applies to us as the primary disciple makers of our kids.
Yeah.
If you look at Genesis 18, 19, he calls Abraham. His descendants are supposed to bless the world. And one of the first things we read about Abraham is that God has chosen him that he may command his children and his household after him to keep the way of the Lord. And if he doesn't do that, you know, the world is not blessed the same way. And then we see in Deuteronomy 6 through 7, this is the Shema, "These words that I command you today shall be on your heart. You shall teach them diligently to your children, shall talk of them when you sit in your house and when you walk by the way and when you lie down and when you rise." This is Moses speaking to the Israelites, but giving them this command. There's nothing more important than for you to teach the way of the Lord to your children.
Yeah.
And you see in Psalm 78, the same theme of, you know, God calling the older generation to speak of his deeds and his strength and his power to the younger generations. And it's not just so that they know the Lord, but also it says in the same passage so that they're not dumb like their fathers. Their fathers are stubborn, they're sinful, they reject the Lord. And you see all throughout the Old Testament what that does to a generation. And I think we've seen that. I think you see this pattern, you know, about every three or four generations that happens in the Bible. And I think if you were to look at generations in modern history, you see the same thing happening. Yeah. But there seems to be this turn where younger parents or Christian parents now are saying, hey, I think there's something missing and I want to be a part of this. I want my kids to have an at-home faith experience that either I didn't have or I had, but I've been neglecting. So we're going to start now. And so one of the things that we often hear when we present the theological argument for, hey, God has given this call to you, is people saying, yeah, I see it, but I'm not qualified for this. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't know the word, or my walk with God isn't great. Like, I need to focus on myself before I can focus on my kids. And they'll make up any excuse. And sometimes it's just, I'm too busy for this. That's different than, I don't think I'm qualified. And yeah, if you look at a seminary-trained pastor or youth pastor or children's minister, they're highly trained. They know the word. They know different age-level developments and how to speak to those kids and reach them in unique ways tailored to that age group. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, let me ask you a question. If there's a fire, if there's a house fire, who's the most qualified person or kind of person to respond to that fire?
A fireman.
Right. And so, assuming that, who's the most qualified then to run into that building and get the people out, save them from that fire?
Yeah, the firemen, the firemen. Rescue people. Yeah.
Right. But if you wake up tonight, and say it's 3 a.m., you smell smoke, you hear the fire alarm going off, you're not going to say, we'll wait for the firefighters.
Yeah.
I'm going to let the firefighters handle my kids. I'm going to go ahead and get out. You're not going to say, well, I'll let my kids decide for themselves if they want to get out. I'll let them choose. This is their business.
Yeah.
No, you're gonna shoot out of bed. You're going to holler. You're going to wake everyone up as fast as you can, and you're going to get them out of that house. Why? Because in that moment, you are the most qualified to save your kids and to get them out of that house because you are there, because you're with them. It doesn't matter that the firefighters know how to fight fires and are stronger than us and have, you know, cool pretty mustaches. Yeah, exactly. They're not there. And so the same applies when we look at the dynamic between, well, you know, the pastor, the children's minister, or the youth pastor, they're more equipped to do this. I'm just going to defer to them.
Yeah.
The responsibility is on us. Why? Because God knew that we were going to love our kids more than anyone else, and that those kids are going to trust us more than anyone else, and the foundation of their faith is going to be built on that trust.
Yeah.
And if we don't take ownership of that, and we default and abdicate that responsibility and that call to someone else, our kids are going to be the ones who pay for it.
Yeah, I think it's, like I said earlier, it's a modern, especially North America church issue, that we've made it that way, that it's only pastors and they're trained to engage our kids. And again, where were you reading from? The Old Testament. That was never the case. It was always our responsibility. It always has been and will always be our responsibility. Our primary responsibility as parents will be to raise those kids and point them to the Lord and take care of them and protect them and show them by modeling, not just, hey, go to church and do this, or, you know, do as I say, not as I do, and show them what it looks like to follow Jesus and give them the right. I've always taken this as a responsibility in my heart is, okay, part of my job is to show my kids how God the Father treats all of humanity. How does He treat His children? That should be my, and again, I fail miserably in that, but that's part of my role is to be, oh, God the Father is like my Father. He's a protector. He cares about me. He listens to me. He sees me, not the other way. And so many people, that's not their story. They have fathers that abuse. They have fathers that hurt. They have fathers that, you know, whatever, neglected. And so, but I think it's always has been, and we just kind of have to get back to that.
Mm-hmm.
We have to point people back, even though it's the way our parents were, the way church, you know, that's the way we've always done it around here.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't mean that it's not our responsibility. The God's still going to hold us responsible for that.
Right.
And that's, to me, is the largest responsibility, or the largest reason why this is critical, in my opinion, is responsibility. It's our responsibility. And I'm a rule follower, so I'm okay with that. I mean, it intimidates me, but I'm like, okay with that. I'm black and white. It's the rule. It's the requirement. But, you know, it's our responsibility at the end of the day. We'll stand before the Lord. How did you lead your home? How did you shepherd your kids?
God gave them to you. Yeah. God gave Eloise and Bo to us. And I heard it said Deuteronomy 6 is there, whether you acknowledge it or not, you know?
Yep.
And, you know, I feel like historically what we began to realize is we're not that many generations removed from just a few generations ago where families did believe this and they did train their children. And it wasn't till around like the Industrial Revolution when efficiency became king and how efficient we can do things that we just started outsourcing the Christian education to the church. But if you think back to the turn of the century, that's like our great, great grandparents' generation. We are that many generations away from families that grew up seeing it in the home.
Yeah.
And so like, our hearts break for families who say, well, I do want this, but I don't know how. Like that's the answer usually across the board, because there's a small little percentage of families that did see it in the home. They do know what to do. Their families poured into them. They had family worship at home. They are reading the Bible together and praying, you know, and making those huge faith impacts on their children's life, but the majority have never seen it modeled for them, or they are brand new to their faith. Maybe they grew up in a broken home that didn't go to church, didn't know the Lord, and so they have nothing to like think back on and have modeled for them. And our heart just breaks and wants to help families do this, because we need as help just as much as the next couple. Yeah. God just really like burdened our hearts to help families, because we do know that Christian parents want their kids to know Jesus.
Yeah.
They want their kids, when they meet the Lord one day, for him to say, I know you. Mm. You know, that's the most important moment. That's what it's all about. It doesn't matter what grades they had or how much money they made or how big their house was or how many cars they had. What that does not matter. Yeah. When you get to that moment, it's going to be, do I know you? Yeah. You know?
Yeah. Yeah. And you did mention that we'll all stand before the Lord. I think It took me thinking about my child standing before the Lord.
Mm.
And at the end of the day, you cannot control their salvation. You can do everything right and still not guarantee that they will be saved. But we've asked some parents this recently. I want you to just imagine your child standing before the Lord. And let's say for whatever reason you are able to witness that moment. Mm. Will you be standing there feeling like you did everything you could to steward the time you had with that child to prepare them for that moment?
Yeah.
And is all that we're doing now here on this earth, as we're parenting our child, shepherding them and preparing them for that moment, or are we spending all of our time preparing them for other much smaller moments that will die away?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So This is where we are in life. Our kids are starting to get out of the home. Son's in second year of college. Got my Arkansas hat on today. About to send him back. So he starts to interact with other people and starts to hear what their upbringing was like. I mean, because we kind of live in a bubble. We're in suburb DFW. It's fairly affluent area. But so you see a lot of that stuff. And in high school, it was a little more superficial. But now in college, like, people really start opening up and sharing what their life is really like. And as they get older, even my daughter and stuff, she has some friends with some horrible just parents that have died or, you know, divorced and different things. So they start to see, and I think you said it, they start putting things together. They see together, number one, are you authentic? But they also start going, as they get older, going, oh, maybe I actually had a really special place, or maybe and I say this as someone who did not do a really great job of like organized, intentional family worship time. Mm-hmm. I feel like I did, not for my own doing, but just all God, I did do a good job of modeling. Hey, this is what it looks like in my life, using God's word in our home, that this isn't just compartmentalized over here. But I just really, I didn't have the tools. And we'll talk about this next episode. I don't feel like I ever was really equipped to do that. But God was in our home. But I'd still probably failed miserably compared to, you know, like, we have organized worship time and all this stuff. So I'm saying this, but if you just make it a point and see it your responsibility and, you know, just really invest in your kids some way, shape, or form, just try. I'm trying to encourage people just to try.
Yes.
They'll see the difference. Because my son came home from college. He's like, thank you. Mm. Like, this world's a wreck. Other people's families, they don't eat dinner together, like only like maybe once a week and all this kind of stuff. I think that was my daughter that said that.
Mm.
She's like, you realize, like, you cook 3 or 4 times a week, and I'm still in the middle of tennis season, and we're busy and everything, but we still sit and eat. Mm-hmm. Like, my friends don't eat together. My friend, you know, just things like that they start putting them together. And again, I'm a bad example. I'm not the best example of what to do.
Mm-hmm.
But man, if you're doing something, if you're trying to do that and see that as your responsibility, they're going to notice, and it'll make an impact.
Yeah. The average kid and teenager spend anywhere from 3 to 5 hours a week eating with their family, but only about an hour of that a week in meaningful dialogue around food.
Yeah.
And we had one of the principals at our kids' school said, if I could lift the roof off of your house every evening and just observe your home, what would I see?
Yeah.
And I love that picture because, one, I think, like, if you lifted the roof of every house around dinner time, most nights, no one would even be home.
Yeah.
Because they would be going to every sport and activity known to man, based on the fear of if we don't, then they can't, then they won't be able to get this team, to get this scholarship, to go here, you know, and we've just made all the priorities. Like, are you even home during that time? And if you are you in the same room? Mm-hmm. And if you're in the same room, are you really with each other? Yeah. Or are you having together alone time is what it's being coined now.
Yeah. Everybody's in their corner. Everybody's on a screen.
On a screen, you know, or are you really with one another, eyes up, connected, in conversation? And I know that just sounds so basic, but these are the lost arts of our day today.
Yeah.
A friend of mine said, he was like, Martha, you can learn anything on YouTube now, right? But people don't, because they still want that human connection.
Yeah.
And we have to model that at home. We were people made for relationship. That's how we were designed. We were made to be with our families. God designed families. And I feel like we're just forsaking all the basic things of just like, talk with one another, be with your family, enjoy being with them, you know, be in your home, have a meal together. Yeah. You know, it sounds like so simple, but you're right. You get on the world and you realize those simple things are the oddities.
Yeah, for sure.
And we're not trying to act like we've got all this figured out.
Absolutely not.
And that we're experts and that family worship in our home looks anything like a perfect picture. In fact,
you don't have like a Shekinah glory coming out of your living room.
Oh my gosh.
No, out through that people in the hallway see it.
Not yet.
Listen, we are here to grow right alongside every Christian parent out there. 100%.
Yeah. But you kind of look at it like, hey, if you're starting something that your family's never done before, it's going to be messy.
Yeah.
I kind of look at it as if, like, if you've not worked out in 10, 20 years, and your doctor says, hey, if you want to be around any longer and you want your heart not to give out, you need to start eating different, exercising.
Yeah.
And you're like, I've never done that. Those first few months, if not years, like, it's going to be really, really hard to get back into the flow. When you start exercising again, it hurts more, right? When you start cutting out some of those sugary carbs, like, you feel it in your head, right? You've still got the cravings. But eventually, you get through to the other side, you start to see the benefits.
Yeah.
You start to see, you know, like in your home, your kids may start asking you to pray with them, asking you to read the Bible. And if you can imagine what that kind of home, what that kind of family life would look like, and set that as a goal, like, I can't wait for the day that my family craves worshiping together.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll get in the next episode a lot into what that looks like and how some strategies and everyday moments where you can start inserting these things into your family's world. Mm-hmm. But it'll be messy to start, but God calls us to do it anyway.
But how beautiful it is, like, when our kids are like, it's family worship night, or are we going to pray?
Mm-hmm.
Well, we need to pray for that. And I'm just so in the zone. Like, I am thankful for the conviction and reminder through my child, you know.
Because, you know, it's always a thing. Like, every family has their thing. Like, you know, like, when I was a kid, so my dad owned a restaurant. And so it was like a nicer steak restaurant. He was there all night, like Friday nights, especially Friday, Saturday nights. Well, so me as a kid, I remember Friday nights was, my mom made it a big deal, even though my dad wasn't there. It's a big deal because that's when Dukes of Hazzard was on TV. That's when the Incredible Hulk was on TV. That's when Dallas was on TV. And so it was like popcorn, snacks, all these things. Like, it was a big deal.
Yeah.
Same thing. We do that. Like, every family innately, somehow you have your thing.
Kind of fun. Yeah.
And so how do you, and again, we'll get into that, but making it that rhythm. But it's just those, you know, it's, kids are, I don't want to, kids are trainable.
they get used
to things. They're formative. Like, they're forming their whole, their brains are still forming. They're doing that. And so but what are we forming them towards? I think is kind of the important part.
As our great friend, Jonathan Williams would say, kids, if you think of their hearts, it's like wet cement.
Mm.
And, you know, when you walk by wet cement, you can stick your hands in it, you can write things in it, you know. It's so formable because it's not hardened yet.
Yeah.
But the longer you go, it is a harder concrete to chip away at, you know. And if you're in the young years, be intentional and to take advantage of it, because Not to say God can't do miracles with hard concrete, but boy, is it a lot easier when your kids are ready to curl up and read a story next to you, or want to talk to you about every single thought they've had today and questions that they have for follow-ups. You know, it's a lot easier when the cement is still wet.
Yeah, and again, that kind of scares me, even though I'm done parenting, done at that age, like, because we're talking about young families. That's kind of the rim, kind of the focus of with families is really that, you know, that younger kid area. But it's kind of scary, like the power that we actually have as as parents, good or bad. Been listening to a podcast the last couple of days. It's been breaking my heart. It's this guy, he's a UFC fighter. He's like the welterweight champion right now. He's crazy. You know why? Because his he heard his mom getting threatened every single night of his life when he was 5 years old, and his dad was beating him, and his dad was beating her, and all these things. No wonder he's crazy. Or also, you have, so to me, that's kind of this big why, but it's really the heavy thing as a parent, as a dad, is I have the opportunity for such great impact in a good way or in a negative way. And I'm just so thankful to God that He took away a lot of things that could have been very negative for my kids that used to be in my life. Super thankful for my wife, who's very relational, and just the kids love her. But man, it's kind of scary. But we don't want parents to be scared. We want them to be equipped. We want them to have confidence. But I think, to me, that's the why. That's what motivates me. Is you can have a great impact. You can have it in good or evil ways.
Yeah. You're going to have an impact.
Yeah, either way, there's going to be an impact.
And statistics prove that no matter how much your teen may act like you're dumb and that you have no idea what they're going through, statistics show that without question, teens value the opinions of their parents more than anyone else when it comes to faith, when it comes to political issues, gender and sexuality. Like, they still... Gen Z and younger still show that they trust their parents' opinions more than anyone else.
Yeah, for sure.
You're going to make a big impact.
All right, so it's critical because it's, number one, it's our responsibility, but it's so important. There's so much riding on this. There's so much pressure from the outside. Any other final thoughts of why it's so critical to have just this priority of disciple-making in the home? Anything else? Final thoughts?
They're going to meet Jesus one day.
Yeah.
That's what I get to every time, as I just think, you and I, every single person, we will die and we will stand before the Lord.
Yeah.
And He will either say, I know you, or I don't. Yeah. And we have an opportunity to tell them about Jesus. Even kids whose parents aren't, you know, to bring them into our home and make our home this light, this place of joy, this place of safety and security. It just takes intentionality in your priorities and the values of your home. And I know we're about to get into the how and the easy ways to do this, but I just think at the end of the day, their salvation is the most important thing we can ever lead them to. And then beyond their salvation and their decision to follow the Lord, what that looks like the rest of their life and the ripple impact that they will have in their life. Yeah. That's what it comes down to, and the urgency.
Yeah. That urgency, the value that there is on our influence and investment and love and shepherding our family. It's a great value. And I love which it's a great opportunity. And I also like it's a great privilege.
Yes.
And so let's embrace it. And I think it starts with knowing that we're not equipped, but that's the whole Christian life. But God's faithful, and He will equip us. And if we're walking with Him and He's leading us, then He'll lead us to be great parents. Even with all of our junk that, you know, that we like to show up every now
and then. We all got it, and He still loves us, and He's still with us.
Yeah. Well, thank you for being on today, Dallas. Martha, thank you for your wisdom. What I really want to thank you for is your heart. Your heart for families, even though, hey, we didn't necessarily have this type of experience at home, but we have a heart for families, and we want this to be a priority in other people's homes. So thank you for being on. Thank you for that heart. One final thing, Martha, if you will tell the listeners and the viewers how they can connect and learn more about With families.
Yes, we would love to have you with us. So check us out at withfamilies.co. And if you want to get some free resources under the freebies tab on our website, we have a link called Sunday Supper. And I send free family devotionals every Sunday that you can use right at your dinner table. And we'd love to have you for Sunday Supper. So join that and you can check out all the other resources that we have on our website. A lot of free ones and then some fun ones we're going to talk about in the next episode. But follow us on Instagram at withfamilies.co and check us out online.
Awesome. Thank you so much. Well, thank you for listening and watching today. We really appreciate you being on, and we just hope this episode is impactful to you. And again, Disciple First is all about helping you make and multiply disciples like Jesus, and especially in your home. So thanks for watching.